Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
It's ours. Our antiques. Our freaks.
For you.
For you.
What antiques are we talking about this week?
I'm going to get a little sentimental. I want to talk about charm bracelets.
Aw, so cute.
I've always been interested in charm bracelets. I think most human beings are. They certainly have like a really vaunted place in pop culture, I would say.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Specifically, I was remembering while I was doing this research in Sideways Times at Wayside High, that book.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That one?
Yeah. First of all, love Louis Sachar. How dare you?
I'm not saying they're not good. I'm just saying the charm bracelets were not the part of the book that stuck out to me.
I remember very vividly that there was a girl, a character in that book, who had charm bracelets that had, like, increasingly absurd mechanical charms on it. And she was described as a rich girl, and she would come to class, and whether or not they were doing show and tell, she would get up in front of the class and show them whatever new charm her rich father had bought her. And I think one of them was, like, a piano with fully working keys. You know, it was absurdist, so it only got more and more strange as time went on.
And I'm assuming it ended in some kind of moral against greed or vanity.
Yeah, I think she got killed by the bracelet.
I mean, probably. Most of those stories ended with children dying.
A lot of kids died in Wayside High. They should look into that.
Tune in to our investigatory report.
Wayside High, it was basically like Baby's First SCP Foundation.
Oh god, it really was! Holy shit.
Right?
Sorry, charm bracelets.
Okay, sorry, charm bracelets. What is a charm bracelet? It is a bracelet.
Wow. Groundbreaking.
Usually a plain or decorative chain decorated with any number of small metal hanging decorations, which are called charms. A charm can be anything that can be hung from something else. I really like this quote from Monica Rich-Kosan, known charm bracelet enthusiast. There is no other piece of jewelry that acts as a time post and chronicles a woman's life like a charm bracelet or necklace. Quick break, I've never heard of a charm necklace, but apparently they're a thing. These tokens of treasured moments, added with souvenirs and keepsakes of new encounters, achievements, romances, humorous events, and significant occasions, all recall and reveal the passage of time and the journey that the woman who wears her charms has taken so far. Charm bracelets also reflect a woman's dreams, hopes, superstitions, goals, and will eventually link together and tell more of her tale as she continues to grow and experience life.
That's a very, I would say optimistic view of charm bracelets.
What's your pessimistic view?
That capitalism loves a product where they can sell the consumer the base and then sell essentially infinite customizable options in perpetuity.
You know, charm bracelets go back farther than Pandora.
I know, but this is where they've ended up.
Yes.
I would argue the invention of charm bracelets opened a Pandora's box that led to Pandora.
Oh, good God. Get out of the room. Walk out of your room. We're not recording in the same room right now, so I'm going to trust you to get up, walk out, close the door, walk outside, and keep walking.
Can do. Goodbye.
Concept that goes back to probably the entirety of human history.
Ever since we started putting shiny rocks on ourselves?
Yeah, there's a lot of, I mean, this, I'm not going to talk about it too much because it's, sorry paleontologists, it's fucking boring. There's always people adorn themselves to invite good spirits and ward off good evil spirits. And it's like, some of them probably just did it because it looked nice, right?
Right, but I don't know if the paleontologists are talking about that very often because they study dinosaurs.
Wow.
I'm sure our archaeologist friends feel just as offended, if it's any consolation.
Like, how dare you? So yeah, charms, basically, a really long history of people picking up shiny rocks and adorning their body with them for a variety of reasons. I'm not trying to be flip. Of course, there were religious and spiritual reasons to do this. And also, it's just nice to be shiny.
But also, a lot of mysticism surrounding gemstones is just like, this is so pretty, it has to be magical.
Yeah.
There's no way it's not.
Exactly.
It's too beautiful.
Like, this is so pretty, this is doing something for me.
And they were right.
And it was.
Moldavite will kill you.
Probably not. This is best known in Egypt, actually. I think Egypt is possibly one of the best known for their use of charms, particularly provably for religious and spiritual reasons. They did write that down, so we can say with sincerity that a lot of what the charms they wore were to praise specific gods or identify them in the afterlife. Obviously, the afterlife was extremely important to the Egyptians. And then it would go on, charms would just kind of be affiliated with both affluence and spiritualism. That was kind of always like the two sides of the charm coin. Is either you were wearing them because you were rich enough to buy something that looked that pretty, or because it was really important to you for some sort of mystical reason.
Such as being the prettiest.
Such as being the prettiest person possible. Very famously, Catherine de' Medici, the Queen of France, from 1547 till 1559, supposedly her charm bracelet was like fully occult. The rumors were that she had brooked with demons to get a charm bracelet that was like just brimming with otherworldly power.
She's a witch.
Probably.
Yas, queen, slay.
That's what we call a girl boss. I think we all called the Medici's girl bosses, right?
Oh God, Jesus Christ.
Eventually, the symbolism of charms would kind of like ebb away as you get to greater interest in science and reason and rationality. That's not meant to be a dunk. It's just like actually kind of how things went.
Yeah, no one was discovering things about the known universe at you.
Yeah.
Science just kind of happens.
During these times of like of great discovery, it just is less popular to put faith in superstitions and things like that.
Because we've discovered that when we wash our hands, our babies die less. Incredible.
Yeah, and you don't need to wear 19 lapis lazuli to keep your baby alive.
In fact, your last three babies choked to death on the lapis lazuli charms, so like, maybe, just maybe, re-examine your strategy.
Can't believe that asbestos hurt my kid. Asbestos, or as I like to call it, the salamander skin.
Is that what the kids call it these days?
That was actually a term for it because it couldn't catch fire.
Yes. The myth of the salamander being a creature of fire.
Fyayar. Fire cannot burn the dragon.
Can't burn a salamander, though.
A regular salamander, yes. Don't do that. That's animal cruelty. So, charm bracelets came back around in a sort of roundabout way with the introduction of chatelaines and watch fobs.
Hell yes, chatelaines. Hell yes, chatelaines.
Yeah. So, obviously, a chatelaine, if you didn't know, is sort of like a ring on which a lady would keep a variety of items on chains that were useful to her, including, like, house keys, scissors, so on and so forth.
Needles, compasses.
Anything she thought she would need to be lady of the house. Obviously, as we're suggesting here, these were associated with noble women who were heads of households, which is very important to the evolution of the charm bracelet. So you have chatelaines, which went on from strictly practical items to slowly becoming more and more whimsical because they did denote a kind of stature.
The kind of stature where you had access to all the house keys, but you didn't necessarily need access to all the house keys.
And ask yourself, how useful is an extremely tiny sterling silver scissors?
I need it in my life, always. Do you have any idea how many tiny things I need to chop into tinier things?
Well, I'm sorry, Kenneth, you're right. So I'm gonna get you that chatelaine immediately.
Thank you.
But, you know, a little tiny pair of scissors did suggest to the outside world that you were extremely domestic. I am so busy being domestic that I need these tiny scissors at hand constantly. And then, Ken, do you know what happened?
I'm assuming one of the Great Wars.
No, actually, that's not... We'll get to that later.
Oh, okay.
Well, I guess, more appropriately, who happened to charm bracelets?
Oscar Wilde?
As my notes say, Queen Victoria, you again.
Oh. All right, her.
So while chatelaines and watch fobs were already important practical and decorative items, Queen Victoria made them extremely fashionable. How many times will you say that in your life while studying antiques? You'll never stop. She did it to a lot of things. Originally, Queen Victoria's fascination with charm bracelets came from a gift from Prince Albert, which was a gold chain bracelet with an enameled heart containing the hair of her children. And she would add a heart as she continued to have children. The first one was Victoria the Princess Royal.
Aww.
So each locket was a different color and had a lock of the little kid's hair, and it was inscribed with their name and their date of birth. Queen Victoria was so taken with this that she went on to give charm bracelets that she had curated as gifts. So she would put together bracelets with little charms that were appropriate to whoever she was giving it to. I mean, obviously that's such an honor to have a gift like that from the queen, especially a thoughtful gift from the queen that she'd actually put work into, in as much as a queen ever does work. And even more importantly, to her creating charm bracelets as the height of wealth and fashion, When Prince Albert died, she crafted a charm bracelet of mourning, a mourning charm bracelet. She wore one constantly, 16 various oval and heart-shaped lockets enameled in black and gold. All of them had either locks of hair or miniature pictures of Prince Albert inside them. Because Queen Victoria wasn't just going to pioneer fashion, she was going to pioneer mourning.
She really did.
As a result of this, Tiffany made its very first version of the charm bracelet with a tiny heart, and you probably know exactly which one I'm talking about, in 1889. Charm bracelets pretty much kept being very popular. Eventually, like, the advances in jewelry cutting and manufacture and, like, availability of metals, because you'll actually see platinum start to come into use at around the Art Deco movement. People only got more into charm bracelets because the charms got funner, because you could make them smaller and more whimsical and with more fascinating gems and metals. And although you did have some mechanical ones in the Victorian era, the mechanical charms became more and more elaborate. Interestingly enough, I kept running into people mentioning Coco Chanel having a charm bracelet. It was like a very superstitious, like, lucky symbol. And one of them is a Maltese cross, so I guess just, like, take a couple minutes and wonder why that is. Coco Chanel's a Nazi. Now comes World War II, the Great War. I know you were really excited to get here, Ken.
Yay.
Yeah, I know. Woo! But it's extremely important to the development of charm bracelets as, like, specifically almost an American phenomena, but also something that, like, everyone knows about and I think lots of people probably had or were interested in. Because charms were something that were cheap at this point, small, and easy to send home to your loved ones when you were abroad. A lot of them would represent the countries a soldier had ended up in, was fighting in, or was just traveling through. Most of the time they were little love tokens, sometimes engraved. And there you go. Because almost everyone who had a soldier in the war had charms that had been sent to them that they wore to remember their loved ones. And as all things go, this eventually led to everyone wanting to have a charm bracelet. Celebrities re-popularized the charm bracelet after the 1950s. Most of them had these charm bracelets genuinely just from having lived through World War II. And wore them constantly. Elizabeth Taylor very famously wore her own in the film Giant. And eventually, charm bracelets became kind of like a part of growing up for little girls. This was because after the 1950s, with all of these high-powered, like, celebrities and political figures, and literally everyone who fucking existed having a charm bracelet, they were cheaper than ever. Eventually, you start getting charms for bracelets in cereals and in Cracker Jack boxes, very famously.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. And the 1950s through the 1960s is the heyday of mechanical charms, which are just extremely exciting in every way, shape, and form. And there was a brief resurgence in popularity during the 1980s for reasons I can only surmise are because they are extremely chaotic to look at, and that just sort of fits.
I have a theory as to why they became popular again in the 80s.
Tell me.
I feel like the 80s was one of those periods of culture where it was peak, someone please tell me what to buy so I'll look like everyone else. And charm bracelets fit really easily into that as a tool of capitalism.
There you go. That makes a lot of sense, especially since charm bracelets had already been anchored into popular culture as, like, a thing young girls had specifically.
It's a way to conform while pretending you're expressing yourself, which is very seductive to the American public.
You take a dim view of the charm bracelet, I see.
Here's the thing. I love charm bracelets. I think they're fucking great. I love that they're customizable. I wish more of it was just, like, finding random shit on the ground and, like, tacking it onto a bracelet.
Yeah.
And less going to a predetermined catalog of several $1,000 chunks of gold shaped like a heart or a kitten, and then, like, subtly hinting to your boyfriend that you want it.
Or not so subtly.
And then getting mad when he picks the wrong rose gold diamond encrusted bauble.
Kenneth, who loves working retail, everybody.
Yay!
Shit, wow, that was really on the nose. Like, my fascination with charm bracelets are, like, especially during the Victorian era, one of the most popular charms to have were actually just, like, coins that were you found that were no longer being minted. There were whole charm bracelets that are actually just different coins. And following that, do you want to hear about how to identify charms from specific time periods?
You know I do.
So I'm gonna start with Victorians, because that is when, in my opinion, the history of charm bracelets as we're talking about them starts. Charms in the Victorian era tend to be light, hollow, and very small. Or coins.
This again.
Yeah, this again. Why did you say that?
Because we covered it in one of our coin episodes, like our love token episode.
Oh yeah, that's right.
We covered coins as charm bracelets.
Oh my god, we do that a lot. Welcome back to Cointown. One of the really specific charms from the Victorian era, although these will be produced forever, going through all of the subsequent time periods and now, is the puffy heart. The good news about identifying a Victorian puffy heart charm is that they tended to be engraved with the year that they were received, so that is extremely helpful.
Handy.
First thing you want to look for is, did someone write down when they got it? It's a great first place to look. Puffy heart is basically a hollow sheet metal, either made from two welded pieces or a single folded piece of metal, and it's just a hollow little heart. They are not lockets. They are different from lockets.
They're not lockets because they don't open and they don't have anything hidden inside them. They're just like an empty shell of two flat pieces molded together. And I'm assuming they look puffy because they kind of mimic the look of, like, say, a heart-shaped pillow because of the seams.
There you are. Perfect. Thank you, Ken. They were very frequently decorated with either enamel or, I'm just going to call it, flush set gems, because the term for it includes a slur. Or they are either repoussé, which is the method of decorating silver by hammering out the design from underneath so that it's raised, or chased, which is the opposite, where you kind of engrave the design into the metal. Other, like, symbols that you're going to see that are going to be pretty distinctly Victorian are willows, flower language, so arrangements of certain flowers. We all know that the Victorians were wild about making up dumb shit about flowers.
For more on that, check out our two-part episode series on Victorian flower language.
Please do, it's a hoot. Anchors, swallows, compasses, lockets in general, horseshoes, and stars. Also, a lot of Victorian charms will be stick pins that someone bent into a charm, which I love. This can be identified by the fact that it looks like someone took a stick pin and used pliers to turn it into a charm. For the Art Nouveau period, you see charms that tend to be 18 karat gold. A lot of the Art Nouveau charms, charm bracelets, are French, which turns out is mostly medallions. They are pieces called a médaille d'amour, or love medal. And very often you will encounter médaille d'amour that say, translates to more than yesterday, less than tomorrow. Also, the Art Nouveau pieces, French or not, tend to feature plique à jour enameling. Plique à jour enameling is the method of enameling where you apply enamel to cells with no backing so that the light shines through them. More on this in our enameling episode. For some reason, literally everyone who studies this lumps Edwardian through Art Deco into one big messy lump of time.
How fucking dare they?
There's a note that says, pause for Ken to get mad.
No, but seriously, how fucking dare they? If you look at Art Deco and you look at Art Nouveau and you look me dead in the eyes and tell me I see no difference, I will ask you to step back because you need to keep 6 feet away from me at all times. We're in a pandemic, for fuck's sake.
He'll say that after the pandemic as well.
It's going to be my life philosophy going forward.
Yeah, 6 feet away. So I'm just going to cover Art Deco. Art Deco is where you see the introduction of platinum, either platinum over gold or solid platinum. Good luck. The only way I can help you identify platinum at a glance is that it tends to be weirdly shinier than silver, almost like fake silver looking, but heavier than fake silver. As for platinum over gold, I don't know why they bother. That seems insane to me. Put the platinum over something else.
Put the platinum over something sturdier. Like, gold is a very soft metal.
If you're a metal worker and you can explain why that is the thing, let me know.
Email us, antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com.
You see a lot of these charms being gem set. And by the Art Deco period, the charms stop being specifically abstract and start introducing references to hobbies, sports, and holidays.
Oh.
So we are creeping more and more to what about modern charm bracelets that make Ken want to die.
Listen, it's not the specificity of modern charm bracelets that makes me want to die. It's the consumer culture of modern charm bracelets.
I would argue that the specificity is led by the consumer culture.
The specificity is led by new technologies emerging, allowing us to mass produce smaller and more intricate details.
Then it's going to be really weird when I tell you that, starting in the 40s, moving through the 60s, charms only got bigger.
What have you done? You've lost. What are you doing? What are you doing? What are
I
you
know.
Doing? Why? Why is this happening?
Yeah, when you're looking at 40s through 60s, considered the golden era of charm bracelets, charms start to get bigger, possibly for visibility. as the charm bracelets became a fashion item and not just like a sort of personal history thing. Most of the mechanical or movable charms that you're going to see are going to be from this period. There was a bear trap one that I saw, which I am in love with. And it has the spring that closes the bear trap on your little finger.
Oh, that's adorable. I love that.
Isn't that so cute? Like, literally, if you can think of it, there's probably a charm for it.
And you can probably buy it for several hundred dollars at Kohl's.
I would go on eBay and get the vintage ones because everyone seems to have forgotten about that. I just lost a bid for a chattering silver charm that looks like little fake teeth. I truly mean anything, by the way.
Oh, I love it.
And by lost it, I meant that at $8, it was too expensive for me, so.
Well, you know.
For the record.
Check out our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks, or order vintage goods from our Etsy shop at etsy.com/shop/antiquesfreaks.
So I can buy more vintage goods that I will in turn eventually sell. This is a very, very roundabout way to possibly own something that I buy. The charms also become more ornate, as Ken had suggested, which ties really well into them being mechanical and movable. And there's a heavy, heavy emphasis on medallions and large discs that just say shit.
Well, because those are very easy to produce.
That's true. And they look really neutral. So if you feel weird about having, like, 96 different horses on your wrist...
Then you're not a real horse girl, you're a fake fan, and you need to go home.
Yeah, then you need to leave my stable immediately. Medallions look very neutral, and like you said, they're extremely easy to produce. They're very easy to personalize. And you can just make them say, like, I love hot dogs, instead of getting a hot dog-shaped charm, which I guess I would probably do the medallion, because having a hot dog-shaped charm, I'd have to be like, I'd have to explain why hot dogs were so important to me that I had it wrought in sterling silver and hung from my wrist forever.
And then you'd have to keep explaining to people why it is, in fact, a sandwich.
Yes, I suppose I would have to do that, Kenneth. That laugh when you know you've got me. This is where introduction of really granular celebrations and holidays and hobbies start coming in. This is where you start seeing charms that have Sweet 16 references on them. Homecoming charms. A lot of them are kid-based. Wonder why. It becomes a really easy thing to give a kid that you don't know very well. It's like, you know, the kid is a cheerleader. Like, here's a cheerleading charm for your bracelet.
Ta-da!
And the holidays and hobbies become more granular. Like, you get hobbies like you get little tennis, chess pieces, so on and so forth. The more granular it is, the more likely it is more and more modern up till the 80s. And the 60s through the 80s, you get the introduction of plastic charms, often given away in cereal and Cracker Jack boxes and things like that. A lot of the plastic ones tend to, by the nature of the beast, be pop culture references of some sort, tied to some kind of brand. Oscar Mayer Wiener Whistle, excellent example, always wanted one. Hit me up if you got one.
I'm noticing a theme with your charms.
Oh my god, why did not... Wait, shit. Oh god, now everyone's gonna know that I like hot dogs.
Your secret's out, D.
But for people who are really into what I like to call label costume jewelry, here are some brands that tend to actually be signed that you can look out for. I'm going to regret saying costume jewelry because I forgot the first on this list was Cartier. That's not costume jewelry by any means. Cartier and Tiffany are definitely two of like the forerunners in fine charms. Other companies include Boucheron, David Webb, William Reusser, Cleef and Arpels. Don't really fit in with all these other names.
Is that like a name on purpose?
Listen, the Dutch are certainly there. My favorite boy, Henry Dankner and Sons.
Incredible.
And Waltern Lample.
All right.
I can't even make it. I don't even know what that is.
At this point, it's Simlish. What are you doing?
It wasn't until I said them all out loud that it occurred to me how fucking bad shit half these names are.
Did you go to a Charles Dickens name generator? What is happening?
No, I was just on eBay seeing some of the popular like brands that had produced charms that were popular and saleable. Notably, while most of those just tend to have the names inscribed on them, Waltern Lample is mercifully represented by a WL and a shield. So you don't have to think about the name too hard. Especially, this is a no-brainer. You want to look for charms that are made out of high-end materials. Although I think sterling silver is really the standard for charm bracelets. I wouldn't be particularly interested in anything else myself. If you set up to collect these and you want to wear them, it helps to pick a material off the bat, because a lot of people don't think silver and gold look wrong. I think those people are wrong, but I'm unpopular in that opinion, so think about that before you get started. Other materials to look for are gold and gold-filled pieces. These are useful because mostly all of them are marked with the purity of the gold, and gold-filled tends to be marked GF for gold-filled. I'm not going to mention vintage platinum and real diamonds because, like, I don't think you need me to tell you that, like, if you see one of those at a yard sale, you should buy it. Like, yeah, get good at figuring out what diamonds look like.
I was about to make a sarcastic joke about taking a diamond tester to yard sales, but I'm pretty sure you actually do that.
I do that pretty frequently. All right, I think I talked about this in diamonds. My trick to determining real diamonds is if it looks like a diamond but kind of shittier than you expected, there's a better chance of it being a real diamond.
It's true.
Especially on something as small as a charm bracelet charm, a real diamond will look pretty dull and uninteresting. If it's sparkly, that's not likely to be a real diamond. A real diamond will kind of look like crappy, dull glass. It's just so mean, but it's true.
Which begs the question, why you want real diamond in the first place? But for more on that, check out our diamonds episode.
Yeah, this is a tip given to me, by the way, of a woman who professionally hunts for diamonds at yard sales to flip. So, like,
work.
Like, literally her first thing is, like, does it not really look like you think a diamond should look like? And investing in a diamond tester is a great idea. They're extremely cheap now. Go for it. As for prices, silver charms from the 1950s and 60s will start around $35 or cheaper, as I have suggested. Gold charms kind of start at $75. And anything from the 1900s, pretty much any material, is going to start at $100 and go up from there. People really, really like mechanical charms from all eras, so, like, if you are looking to get into reselling, you cannot go wrong with mechanical charms.
Because it's cool! It's like a tiny little moving thing!
It's so cool!
It's clockwork miniatures! It's the best of both worlds!
If someone hands you a miniature mechanical charm and you don't, like, squeal, or just like, oh my god, that's so cool, like, you're dead. I'm sorry. Like, we're gonna have to get a box for you.
Congrats, you're broken. Enjoy!
You also want to keep an eye out for charms that are created for fraternal organizations, such as the Masons, or the Odd Fellows, or the Elks. I found out that the Elks charms for charm bracelets are usually just teeth. Animal teeth?
Okay,
so
I guess that's kind of thematic. I would think they'd be like antlers, because the Elks...
It's walrus ivory or deer teeth.
I will say the deer teeth makes a little more sense than the walrus for me personally, but I'm also not a member of the Elks.
I think the walrus is supposed to be like a chunk of antler, but like I have good news about how available antler is.
Yeah.
The deer themselves throw them off every year. So if you see deer teeth charm, like A, I think you don't need me to tell you, buy that immediately. And it's probably an Elks thing, and there are a lot of people who are interested in collecting fraternal organizations. Especially the Masons. People love Mason stuff. Real ivory charms in general, if it looks like teeth, that's a good sign. I mean, the material. If it looks like an actual tooth, then you should probably be confused or just glad that you found an Elks charm. And also, the celluloid charms from the 1930s and 40s, also called gumball charms, frequently either animals, comic strip characters, or Wild West themes, are really popular. People collect those pretty avidly, although they don't command an incredible price, but for the size and probably how cheaply you could get them at a yard sale, it's pretty good. You would be looking at like $15 to $30, depending on what it depicted. And Stanhopes. A Stanhope is a wonderful thing. Might have an episode on it in and of itself, but in short, a Stanhope would be a little small charm that has a tiny window that you look through and there's a picture inside it.
Dee, I have some great news for you about our upcoming Stanhope episode.
What?
There's a Ripper Street episode about that.
Thank God.
It's a major plot point that gets my favorite character killed. Spoilers!
So for research, we're going to have to watch that episode.
Oh yeah.
What you want to look away from is pot metal. People say that. You know what? I'm going to backpedal. Don't look away from it. I think the joy of charms is in what they're depicting and not necessarily the metal, but like, we're talking about reselling, so like, if that's important to you, then pot metal's not going to make you a lot of money. Pot metal is a tin and lead alloy. It's pretty much all junk metal that you would run into. I think I've called it pig metal before.
You have?
Yeah.
I've been very confused.
Yeah, I forgot that pot metal was like the accepted term. The easiest way to kind of on the fly decide if something's pot metal is that it won't have detail. They tend to be pretty blobby. Pot metal doesn't hold detail very well, so it just won't look as crisp and fine as something that was made out of silver, for example. again, I don't think that's super important, because if it's a pot metal, like, oh, I don't know, a piano that has all the individual keys that move, someone's going to want that very badly. Other than that, just check for metal markings. They were very common, particularly on gold. I believe you can refer back to our silver episode for more information on silver markings that'll help you kind of figure that out. Usually, the marking will either say the word sterling or SS for sterling silver. That's American. And international pieces will usually have a mark that'll indicate the purity of the silver. And gold is pretty regularly just stamped with its purity, either 14 or 18 generally, sometimes 20 if it's Portuguese. The Portuguese didn't like gold that could withstand being on your neck without melting for some reason. I did find a really cute guide on starting your own charm bracelet for if you're interested in charms, just for the personal charm of it.
Oh!
This was where they said you should choose between gold and silver. I think they look fine together. I don't get why you can't have them.
Choose silver.
Okay, I'm wrong. Choose silver. You'll want to choose silver because A, it's cheaper and more things exist in it.
And also, it's not going to mush in on itself after you put all the hard work of finding something delicately crafted and beautiful.
That's true too. Yeah, if you want to wear a charm bracelet, you do want to consider sturdiness. If you find charms that you're really attached to, you would consider having them welded onto the bracelet more strongly so that they don't fall off of like the jump rings, for example. That is a very popular thing to do with people who wear charm bracelets to keep them as a personal keepsake. That is an important decision, though, because that will do a lot to the saleability of individual charms. And a charm bracelet as a whole thing, while extremely valuable, especially if it's themed, it's harder to sell.
Because the whole point of a charm bracelet is its customizability.
Yeah.
And once all the charms are fixed in place, it is no longer customizable.
You would be surprised at the number of people who want to buy one already done, though.
Okay, so you have a whole catalog of predetermined personality traits to purchase, and you still want someone to pick all the personality traits for you?
There are whole services that just do that for you.
At that point, why are you bothering being alive?
I didn't get into, like, the buying and selling of complete charm bracelets, because, like, obviously if you find one at an estate sale, that is delightful. Because it is sort of like a handbook into the person who's owned it, or the people who've owned it.
Right, but...
if you're trying to buy a whole one, like, why? Go do something else with your time. Draw a picture. I don't know what to tell you. And most people I know who buy complete charm bracelets, if they're not themed in some way, if they're not, like, consistent, if it's just, like, a big mishmash of different charms that meant something to the person, they usually dismantle it and sell the charms individually because, as Ken has made extremely clear, the beauty of them is making them yourself. I don't find whole bracelets being sold very often, again, like, unless they've got some kind of hook that's interesting about them. You can actually start by buying a bracelet that has, like, a couple of charms. This is, in my opinion, better, easier, more popular, and cheaper. Generally, it was just if you find a bracelet that has, like, two or three charms and the charms already appeal to you, that's a great start. Because then you just won't have a blank bracelet and feel weird about it. And they also suggest keeping a little history about each charm with the date, the giver, the occasion, where you found it, which is just fun for you to remember all the stories about the charms that you accrued. And that's it. That's charms. I hope you were charmed by it.
2 points.
Yes.
One, I am giving myself a gold star for going this entire episode without mentioning the hit television show Charmed, either in the original iteration or its reboot.
I titled my notes with Charmed the TV show because I was waiting for you to mention it. Imagine my surprise when you held back.
Second point, the platonic ideal of a charm bracelet is a punk jacket. Discuss.
Oh,
because each patch, it's all handmade, it's all hand assembled over the course of years as an expression of individuality, and each patch or jewelry or painting or other customizable part of it is uniquely chosen by the person who wears it.
I heartily agree. I don't know if you're thinking that you're going to get a rise out of me with that, like the hot dog question, but...
D, not everything I do is to make you mad.
I know.
Sometimes I just enjoy sharing ideas with my friend.
I know. I agree. I think that's a delightful way to look at the punk jacket. And I think punk jackets, as far as I know, our listeners and friends who are more versed in vintage clothing can, of course, correct me. Pretty popular in the vintage market, I think, because they are little stories about the person who made them.
And each one is actually unique, unlike a charm bracelet.
Well, they used to be.
Oh, no. D, don't crush my dreams. D, I have so few of them.
Did you not see that, like, brand name, like, I can't think of a popular brand right now. Gucci, like, it was like a Gucci leather jacket, and it had like a bunch of dumb patches, and they misspelled suicidal tendencies, so it said suicidal tendies.
Wow.
Does that exist?
At that point, it's performance art, I think.
And yeah, unfortunately, you can find prefabbed punk jackets now, because industrialization ruined everything. And you always know.
That's cheating, and everyone who looks at you will know it.
If the punk jacket doesn't have at least one bottle cap that someone looked at while they were drunk and thought was extremely charming that they've sewn on, then, like, it's fake. Move on. It's a million legit punks who just look down at their non-bottle cap jackets, very sadly. Because we have a million listeners that we don't know about. And all million of you should join the $1 tier on our Patreon.
Oh, speaking of sources.
Our sources today include MonicaRichCosan.com, A History of Charms, HistoryDaily.org, A Charming History, Charmco.com. You'd be surprised, the whole website.
Incredible.
CountryLiving.com, their antiques article on vintage charms, Antique Week issue 2679, which can be found online at antiqueweek.com, vintage-charm-jewelry.com. You'll be surprised, it's the whole website. This one's my absolute favorite, my highest recommend if you want to get into this, because it's mostly a blog about vintage charms that they are collecting, but they do also share catalogs that they find. If you're into antiques, you know a catalog is the best way to plumb the history and assign dates to things that otherwise nobody remembers. And howtobuyvintagejewelry.com, what a name, buying guide to vintage charm bracelets.
It's just what it says on the tin.
What you see is what you get.
No one's been disappointed yet. Don't be scared. Give me a try. There is nothing you can't buy.
Whoa.
This has been your weekly microdose of Jesus Christ Superstar.
Make sure you come back every week and Ken will drop a different Jesus Christ Superstar clip. And by clip, I mean he'll say it.
If you would like to suggest an episode topic or just say hello, you can email us directly, antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com. You can post in our Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends, or you can tag us on Tumblr, antiquesfreaks.tumblr.com.
If you are extremely excited that Ken mentioned your favorite musical of all time, Jesus Christ Superstar, you can go on down to wherever you're listening to this podcast and leave us a rating. 5 stars. Thank you for remembering Jesus Christ Superstar, the musical, my favorite musical. Every review you leave is monstrously helpful to us. It gets our dulcet tones into millions of punk rock ears.
We have a delightful review recently from LipstickPunk777.
Oh, thematically appropriate.
I think I wasn't more than 5 minutes into the first episode I listened to that I was cracking up and thinking, oh, I have found my people. Love this podcast. Sparkle emoji.
Aww.
I look forward to every episode and have learned so much.
That's so sweet. Thank you so much, Lipstick Punk.
Hell yeah. If you would like to buy a variety of vintage goods or t-shirts and stickers with the podcast logo on them, you can check out our Etsy at etsy.com/shop/antiquesfreaks.
Clown drop coming soon.
So many vintage clowns.
It's really weird. Someone help me.
Someone help us get rid of these clowns. Are they haunted? Maybe. We'll find out.
They're gonna be by the sheer amount of fear I've put into them.
If you would like to listen to deleted scenes or our chapter-by-chapter presentation of the Victorian Penny Dreadful Varney the Vampire, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks.
I cannot recommend Varney enough. Boy, howdy, is that story going off the rails.
Special shout-out to our current patrons for paying our hosting fees and filling our hearts with love.
So much love.
And thank you in particular for listening.
That's right, you.
Au revoir.
Goodbye.